Miller.
Step onto the winning field with the Sports Field Management Association. Championing the sports field industry and its dedicated professionals, SFMA blends the precision of turf grass science with the finesse of field maintenance artistry to craft nothing short of perfection. Playable, safe, and visually stunning surfaces that set the stage for athletic greatness. Established in 1981, the Sports Field Management Association fosters a vibrant community of like-minded individuals committed to excellence. Today, our legacy of innovation continues to soar, fueled by our members' commitment to sharing insights, fostering learning, and providing access to invaluable resources. Join SFMA and unlock a world of benefits. Forge powerful connections with industry peers, united in their passion for elevating sports field standards. Elevate your game with cutting-edge educational opportunities designed to sharpen your skills and keep you ahead of the curve. Streamline your workflow with access to a wealth of information and tools, saving you time and effort. Ready to take your sports field management journey to the next level? Visit sportsfieldmanagement.org now to discover the opportunities awaiting you in the SFMA community.
The session's talk will be Beyond the Field, Utilizing History, Technology, and Mentorship to Define the Future of Sports Field Management. We've got Dr. Mike Goatley, PhD, Chad Price, Abby McNeil, Leah Withrow, and Travis Hogan. The moderator is Dr. Drew Miller. Dr. Miller.
Welcome, guys. We'll get them on stage real quick. We're very excited to be here today. Obviously, you usually see one inspirational speaker. Well, I don't think there's anything more inspiring than this group right here that's coming on stage. So we're excited to be here. Like we said, we're aiming to use our history, where we're going, technological advances, and everything that's going towards something new in our industry. So we're excited to be here. We're going to start off a little bit with the history. Dr. Goatley, former president and so many more things in this industry. What role does our history play in the association's future and where we're looking to go here in the coming years?
So I went to the webpage, and I tell everyone in here, if you think about this, check out the SFMA webpage and look at the history section, because in 1981, four founders got together, and there were certainly other people involved that said, instead of working as individuals, why don't we work as a team? And you read about where we were in 81 in the early years of growth, and you think about what that group what that meant for us and where we are today is just a small group. First few years, maybe up to a couple hundred, 300 members. And then we started having a conference like this. And they had the foresight to realize what that value is. So when I think about the history, Drew, it's Mrs. Goatley gives me a lot of the advice. And she gave me a metaphor to use today that I've heard her say before was, with the historical perspective, think of it like driving a car. You got a lot of windshield around you, which mostly you've got a direction you're trying to get there. You've got a plan, but you also have the rearview mirror and you even have some mirrors on the side. And it's like, while we know we're going here, it's always a good idea to look behind you just a little bit and see where you've come from. That's the way I think about from the history is we never want to forget where we're coming from, but we want to know, well, where are we going? And the other point was, when I think about the history from my perspective, is from the relationships that are formed at this conference, in this association. Because one thing that I noticed for the week that I'm here, it's a week primarily of smiles. And that's huge, because this is a great opportunity to visit. And when I see some of the historical figures that I hope everyone here will meet, and some of the past presidents, past board members, again, they've all got smiles on their face.
Absolutely love it. Abby, obviously being a leader in this industry, what have been some of the best parts of the SFMA's history, where our industry has made significant strides for the betterment of all industry when it comes to the professionalism and everything that we have going on at all levels?
To me, it's just providing an opportunity for this to become a collaborative community.
and celebrate everything. So if you look at, we started out with the foundation, establishing the foundation, so SAFE, and then we established a certification program to raise the level of who we are and who our members are and to give them something to achieve. We have a great and robust awards program. We have Rising Star. We have the environmental certification. The association continues to build on ways to promote who we are and what we do for the betterment of our community and all those that use our fields and the education that goes behind us and who we are. And so that's helped grow this as a very collaborative and supportive group. The one thing that I look back in history on is there hasn't been anybody who hasn't been there to answer a question for anybody. And that's what this whole week is about, is to grow your network and the pool of people you can reach out to find out answers. We are our biggest competitors in our own community as well as nationwide and worldwide, but we're always there for each other. And so that's all of coming from within and then going outward.
Couldn't agree with you more. Best part about this industry is always the people for me, and it's something that with everyone on the stage, we're able to create a relationship, so I couldn't agree with more on that. Travis, we're happy to have you here. Saw you were able to thaw out from last week's game. It's always good.
Yeah, I just thawed out like yesterday when I got here.
Obviously, you have a lot going on. You've been in this industry, both sides, and be able to bring perspective from the golf side to the sports side. Where have you seen growth in our industry from an NFL groundskeeper's perspective when it comes to the profession and the workplace?
I think the biggest growth that I've seen is just what people are providing, right? If you look at film from a game in 1994, you look at film from a game today, I mean, it's changed obviously dramatically of what we're expected to provide. I mean, you have 4K cameras now. Like, they can see everything, right? Like, I used to be able to, like, maybe throw some lanes in and hide some of the damage in the center before you had Skycam. Right now you have a 4K Skycam that literally shows every divot on the ground, right? So I think the biggest changes I've seen is just people's will to continue learning and also wanting to get better every year. I feel like we're providing better services year in and year out, and I think that's what we're all here for, right, is to help each other do that. I also feel like social media has helped in the standpoint that I can follow a lot of people that are in this room, and we can all use that to learn from each other. If it's not something you want to put out there, you can message someone and say, hey, I'm just curious, what would you do in this situation? I do that quite a bit as well.
Leah, sort of the shift towards baseball. You know, over the past few years, the PDL has changed how minor league organizations grade their facilities, the field, obviously. How has it changed your role and the way that groundskeepers are doing their job, you know, at the minor league level?
It was a big change when Major League Baseball bought out Minor League Baseball and created the Player Development League. But it did force the hand of many clubs who were not spending money on the grounds department or skimming off of our budget and cutting us down. It now has forced us to and provided us equipment lists that's a requirement and practices that are a requirement. And MLB has acknowledge that our education is specific and important, and the knowledge that we provide to our clubs and our players needs to be important in that role. And so they have now required all head groundskeepers to be degreed or certified as a sports field manager. And I think that's going to change our professionalism and make us part of that front office, acknowledging that we know something so specific that's very important to what MLB is trying to do to improve their game.
I love the idea of education has become more paramount, and it's incredible to see that that's sort of become a standard because so many people in here are trying to further that, and something that we've been able to see through the networking and all that. Chad, with your work, I mean, you're at all levels across the board, from the NFL to your local community working on high school fields. Can you give us an idea of sort of the needs of the industry professionals that you see and how you've seen advancement in the groundskeeper's role and how you've been able to help with their facilities and sort of just the growth across all areas that you've, again, been able to have such a large impact on?
Well, excuse me. So I think as far as the development or changes that I've seen, you know, I guess I'm one of the older people up here, maybe.
Absolutely not.
Maybe that's why I was asked to be on this panel.
That was not the question. Nope.
The old guy. So, you know, the advances in technology and what we see, you know, the things that Travis mentioned with the cameras and Leah mentioned with the PDL, you know, there's a lot that has got us to this point. I remember when laser grading equipment first came out, like when I first started in business, you know, something that's changed my life a lot is sod grown on plastic, which gives you a way to, you know, have games in short order. So the advancements in the industry are there, and the technology that we have, the bar's definitely been raised across the board. Every year is something more. And I think those advancements are good. Where I see that maybe we're lacking, just to be honest, is how we're compensated, you know, the people in this room. And the question I would pose, not to try to make anybody angry, but are you viewed as a professional, really, you know? And I know that Travis is. I know Leah is. Abby is the boss, I think, wherever she works, so she may not care. But does the school board value your opinion, and do they see you as a professional? You know, does the front office do that? And if we're lacking in that, and thereby affecting ultimately our pay, right? I mean, we got issues in this industry of burnout and sometimes starting lower pay. I just had three kids going through college, and when two of my sons work in the company, when they make decisions, like, what am I going to do? If they come to work for dad, they may not make as much money if they went to work with an IT company or whatever. So what can we do there? And I think there are things that we are doing. I think the PDL can help. I think being a certified field manager can help. I know that being on the SAFE board, the things, the initiatives that we're trying to work towards about through outreach and education, and how can we let the world know, not the people in this room, but the people outside of this room, how can we let them know and see the value in a sports field manager, thereby maybe more money for those positions? If you see value in that, if you see the what it takes to have a field 2 weeks ago and whatever it was, like minus something, like what it takes to pull that off, it's just incredible, you know, the commitment and the skill and expertise we have in this room and in this organization and in this industry. How can we make that more recognizable to the public?
And I think you lent right into our next topic. Obviously, technology has been a driving force in sort of furthering this industry, pushing the envelope with natural grass and everything that's going forward. Obviously, one of the big parts of our technological piece is obviously the workplace and how we operate. Abby, in your role, you know, it's such a large scale with so many different parts of the job that you have to maintain. What are some of the technologies that you've implemented to ensure not only just the work getting done, but having an improved quality of work for you and your staff?
Well, we created a best management practices and standards document. I used part of the BMPs that the sports field managers put out, and then I worked with my teams, and they adopted it to their specific areas. And so we spent all of 2022 and 23 in a draft document to get them to buy into this is what our new level of standards were. And in doing that, then we also tracked what and where we did things so that I had the data to show what we were doing and where we were doing it to the bean counters or those that just want to see, you know, why do I need more of X, Y, and Z, whether it's staff or money or equipment. I now had, this is how much it takes us to do these tasks to help justify to go for those asks. City Council in our town likes that data, and they see the direction we're going. And so I feel like I finally have buy-in from gathering all of that from staff to City Council that makes the decision.
Absolutely. Leah, obviously, technology has become more paramount in your work. The other aspect is Can you sort of talk how you use it on the field, but also off the field? You've been sort of at the forefront of how social media has had an impact on what you're able to accomplish, whether it's hiring a staff, whether it's working within your organization, making people more aware of the industry. Could you sort of speak to those things and how you use it on and off the field?
Yeah, so on the field, I think we've all felt the labor shortage in some way or another. I mean, you go to a grocery store right now, and everything's self-checkout. And it's not because the self-checkout things are cool and the new technology is fun to use. It's because grocery stores can't hire enough people to check you out. They don't have a physical person to scan your groceries and put them in a bag anymore. We're feeling the same exact thing. So we were able to work with and get an autonomous mower to do our landscape areas. So our seeding berm is now mowed daily by an autonomous mower, which is great because the front office loves that the seeding berm is mowed every day, and I get a whole person back. Instead of wasting 6 hours a week mowing a seeding berm, I have 6 hours of somebody else on the field using a human to do what I need to do on the field and not spreading us out so thin. So I think technology on the field, labor shortage-wise, or soil sensors, or the grow lights, has just tripled what it was 10, 20 years ago. And I think the other key on that off the field is the social media aspect of it, where everyone has their own opinion about it, and that's all good. But 20 years ago, we didn't have it, and now we do, and we have to use it as a tool in our toolbox. You don't have to completely dive into it, but you need to understand that the benefits of going to YouTube and watching a video on how to fix something is something people didn't have 20 years ago and is now in our pocket. Using social media to recruit my interns and seasonal help has been a huge piece. And as Travis spoke about before, is being able to message every single person in this room via Twitter or Instagram or Facebook to ask a question is something we didn't have 20 years ago either. To be able to contact anybody with a question by just pulling the little box out of my pocket is something I take for granted every day, but I think it's something that we could acknowledge a little bit more. Even if you're not a big social media guy, it's a tool. It's not just scrolling through and liking pictures. It can be used in positive ways.
Absolutely. Dr. Goodley, I'm going to take us back, back to when I walked into your classroom. I'm not going to say how many years ago that was, but...
Just a couple.
Just a couple. We'll say that. obviously, there's been advancement in technology, but alongside that advancement when it comes to variety of grasses and everything that we've done and what you guys have accomplished as education and research. From an agronomic standpoint, Patriot Bermuda grass specifically was a big one when I came in. That was the new cool temp Bermuda grass that was the up and coming. Can you sort of discuss how the advancement of turf grass varieties that have played a role sort of into technological advancements, and more specifically those advancements in Bermuda grass, could you sort of discuss how that's had an impact on this industry?
Yeah, I still look at, you have to have the basics first before you can apply the greatest technology in the world, because it still comes back to doing the necessities. And in the grassing world, when you think about where we've come in the last 20 years, the revolutions in all of our grasses in terms of drought tolerance, recuperative potential, pest tolerance. Again, we look back where we were in the old NTEP varieties, and you can still find a few of those very best things out there, but they turn over 6 or 7 years. And when you mention something like Patriot, Patriot was a game changer in the mid-Atlantic as the first real opportunity to take Bermuda grass further north and anticipate it to come back, knowing that Mother Nature is still in charge. But I went to Zach Simon's talk this morning, Bermuda grass 18 miles north of Chicago. Phenomenal job using blankets and everything, that you have to pull off a miracle there. And you tie that together with technology, like what I watch what Travis is doing and the miracles that he works all the time. You get the best genetics going with the potential to use this technology to cheat Mother Nature. Yeah, it blows me away, and it's only getting better because we have more and more choices out there now than we've ever had, and that's only going to continue.
Now, right into Travis, obviously, dealing with the cold temperatures and everything, you sort of, you know, you've sort of adapted sort of what the average groundskeeper's approaches are when it comes culturally, right? Whether there's the technology that you use from long-range forecasts to growth pods, grow lights, we can go down the list, obviously. Can you sort of explain how you've been able to take the technology and enhance the scientific attributes of the job where you've sort of been able to capitalize on your ability to grow turf grass?
I mean, I I'm a problem solver by nature, right? I enjoy it. Like, I like the challenge of... I don't like all of them. I didn't like the -8 challenge last week.
Are you sure?
That one wasn't as fun, but I've always just been a thinker. And so, you know, when I first took over, that's the first year we got heat. And so I started asking guys, you know, do you ever turn your heat on to grow grass? And they're like, no, we only turn the heat on, like, for cold games. So I started thinking, like, well, what happens if we turn the heat on to grow grass? You know, so I went to my boss and said, hey, I want to turn the heat on in September. And he's like, we don't need heat in September. I said, we do for Bermuda. If I want Bermuda growing aggressively through September and part of October, I want to see if we can get farther in the season on straight Bermuda and then overseed later. And he's like, you want to spend $10,000 on a science project? I said, yeah, but what if that science project saves us $400,000? Like, yes, it's a gamble. I'm willing to put the work in if you're willing to let me do it, right? So we started there with heat. And then we started working with grow lights, and then obviously we've always had grow blankets, and then we started using turf pods and being able to monitor our heat. We know what we're set at 9 inches down, then we have sensors at 6 inches. Well, now I can monitor 2 3/4 inches, and then I set one on a wood block. So I put it in the hot corner at 1 inch so I can figure out with grow blankets and heat turned up and all those things what my soil temperature is before we were guessing, right? And there was years that it worked really well. And 1 year we took blankets off and we were wiped out all the way down the field 15 feet in with Pythium in December, right? Because we had the heat cranked. We have no idea what our actual soil temps are at the top. So, I mean, a lot of it's going to be trial and error, but I'll use anything I can get. I mean, I have a meteorologist I use that I feel like is one of the best long-range forecasts I've ever seen, and I'll ask him for 30, 60, 90-day forecasts. I'm not going to hold him to it, but when I think we're going to come out of dormancy, or I think I should start messing with it, and he sends me info saying, hey, look, in 2 weeks, this cold cycle is going to come back around. You need to be ready for it, right? It helps me make short-range decisions and, obviously, long-range decisions. But I'll use any technology I can possibly get.
Absolutely. With all these technological advancements, obviously, we are helping ourselves when it comes to labor, but obviously, we want to focus on that next generation. And there's a lot that goes into that when it comes to the recruiting aspect, when it comes to the retention aspect. There's a lot that goes into it, and as professionals, it's our job to sort of accomplish that, right? So, Leah, when it comes to all these technological advancements, how do you see that sort of impacting the next generation of sports field management?
So, this is a crazy stat that a lot of you are going to be scared when I say it, but by 2030, 30% of the workforce is going to be Gen Z. So, understanding how they work is going to be the next thing you need to understand. We have all of Drew's students sitting right here who I love and adore who are anxious to get into this industry, but they understand there's a lot of shortfalls that we've been experiencing and struggles that they've had to work through, and they're willing to find the shortcut in the best way. They're not trying to cheat or like get by and not do the work. They just think there's an easier way to do it, and they're going to come up and find the solutions for it. And I think it's amazing. I mean, just the technology that's improved in 10 years. Like, imagine now Gen Z's coming into this. What's going to happen in 5? It's going to improve dramatically for us. And I think understanding that they're a generation that's only ever known the internet, they've never had dial-up, they never had to send a fax. These are all things that they don't understand, but they are learning new things and teaching us now. It's starting to turn back around. And from a recruitment process, that's huge for us. I mean, we want all of those kinds of people coming into this industry. I think we need to be better advocates for this industry if we were trying to get more people in. I mean, how many of us have complained about the hours we work? How many of us have complained about how much we get paid? How many of you have done it in front of an intern or a young assistant? It happens. And it's happened to me as an intern. I'm somebody who is gung-ho excited for my first internship. I loved taking my turf classes. I loved going to the stadium every day. I was learning something every day. But my head groundskeeper and my assistant groundskeeper were constantly complaining about how much they work and how underpaid they are and how much they didn't like their job. And I'm looking at these people thinking, I want to be you one day. Like, these are people I'm looking up to, and all they're doing is complaining and hating their life. Like, I was questioning, do I even want to do this anymore? Do I need to be changing my major? Like, this is something I was looking forward to, and everybody I've talked to just complains about it. So we need to start changing the narrative and start talking about the positive things just as much. And be careful when you are talking to your staff or your front office that you're not just the negative Nelly in the room all the time. You want people in this industry. Don't talk down on it. Try to hype people up. Try to get people excited about it. People in this room, we've all shared our war stories and things that we wish weren't happening and the events and monster trucks on our field and all the hard times, but we're not talking about all the successes we have and we're not celebrating each other's successes. And I think that's the biggest key to getting this next generation to continue into this industry and converting people who originally didn't major in field management or wasn't looking for field management but found it and loved it and continuing to progress their education and continuing to get keep them excited about it. That's how you gonna get people here and to be excited to work for you and enjoying each other's company, as you've mentioned, is the best part of this conference. So let's remember the good things and not just all the bad things.
The SFMA is excited to announce a new program, the Mentorship Program, where we aim to help develop and grow the next generation of sports field manager. Please sign up today at sfma.org. There are incredible opportunities to have an impact on a young individual and a young professional's career and helping them guide them in their journey to ensure that we have the next generation who is going to propel and grow and continue to excel at all levels in the hopes to grow our entire industry and take everything to the next level. So please join today, and we are excited for this opportunity to create new connections through a network of mentors and mentees that will foster excellence in the field.
Another part that I love about this conference is getting to meet the college students that are here that are excited to see that excitement. Dr. Goatley, what's your take on the current state of college turf programs, and what do you believe sort of is the outlook of the years coming ahead when it comes to whether that's enrollment, whether it's internships, whatever you have seen and what you're looking forward to?
Well, Leah just dropped some truth. Is that a close of enough Gen Z statement that they will understand what I'm talking about? Because those are the cold, hard facts about this, and I wanted to do one quick follow-up, but if I ask for a show of hands of you, because I'm a complainer too, even with the griping, how many of you still would say, I still enjoy my job? All right, so you students, I'm pleased that you didn't get up and run out when you had the truth dropped on you, because it is the case. Now, your question. It's tough to get into programs. Again, it's changed in my career in which the admissions requirements and things, it's just crazy, and most of my colleagues that I know with, we all joke that we would not be accepted into most universities as a freshman four-year student. So what Leah said about us championing our industry, you saw the hands go up. It's going to take some effort. We've got to convince, in my role, our academic leaders to give students in these majors a chance to get in and study. And I agree with Leah, two-year, four-year, that's great. There's so many great people in here without formal degrees that have the passion, because I still see that's one thing. No one in here is really getting rich, but on a day-to-day basis, this group is the most passionate one. So I tell students, if this is your dream, the answer is there. It might not be easy, but don't give up, and then work with advisors, folks, about getting into these types of programs. So I don't have an easy answer, Drew. It's not one that – it's one I think about, but it's not one that I'm poised to solve right now.
For sure. Chad, obviously working alongside so many different professionals, from your experience, what do you believe is the next step for growing the workforce, not only in quantity, but also in quality? Because a lot of what we focus on when it comes to, oh, I need staff. Well, did you give them the opportunity to become better? Did you actually have them, you know, learn the actual process? What do you think is the next step for growing that?
Well, that's a challenge for sure. You know, we all hear about shortages in the workforce and where are these people going to come from. There's one thing that I think is sort of a common denominator in what we do, maybe what we all do, at all these different levels represented in this room. And some of my favorite philosophers, the Dixie Chicks, they have a line in one of their songs. I want to touch the earth. I want to break it in my hands. I want to grow something wild and unruly. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do, you know? And I hope the pay is going to be okay, you know, or the hours aren't going to be too long, you know. But so those are the challenges. So how do we address that? I mean, I think about it in our company and what we do. I mean, internships is a great way, even if it's just a step down the road for people to figure out what they want to do. You know, most of the interns we have are college level. And so I think about by the time you're in college, you know, some of your path is already set, maybe, you know. How do we get kids earlier than that? How do we get people earlier than that? And I think what you're doing at Principal is a big part of that. Like how, where are our vocational programs in our schools, you know? I mean, I got thrown out of shop class, almost cut somebody's arm off. But, you know, where can we connect with people? Because there are people that want to work with their hands and put their hands in the soil and, you know, are willing to do these things if they even know the opportunities out there. So where's our voice? Where's our voice as an industry? You know, honestly, maybe I said it before, but that's where I think some of the things we're doing with the SAFE Foundation are important. You know, we have some objectives we're trying to reach and for outreach and for research, you know. And so I think that getting a voice in the public is good. What if we had a commercial during the Super Bowl or whatever, you know, like highlighting, I know that's a lot of money, but highlighting, you know, what this industry does, because it's a cool thing. All your friends are probably pretty like, hey, that's a cool job, man. That, you know, but how do we, maybe that's the way we got to pull people into this from anywhere, because people still want to do it. Our times have changed, our technology has changed, but people are still sort of programmed a certain way, I believe. Some people don't want to be inside.
So I mean, I'm going to ask you the same question. Where do you really think those next steps are, and how are we going to get that voice out there?
It's going to take all of us. I mean, it's really going to take all of us to push outward, to work with SAFE and their messaging. But we have to champion ourselves. So we have to go out and show that value to spread it out. We have to be the stone in the pond that ripples it out. We have to be front-facing and use social media and all of its avenues as our ally, as a tool in the box, like Leah said. It was a fantastic statement. I mean, I'm not very good with social media, but I'm not against it. But use it for the good. You know, you only know what you know, right? That's what I tell my staff, so don't hide it from me. Bring it to me, but we have to take our message outward.
Now, Travis, obviously championing that and being able to do that, there are certain things that we have to do as professionals to maybe prove that we are that profession that we're trying to champion, right? What are some of those things that we can do to promote or elevate sort of our status as sports field managers, whether that's in the organization, whether that's among your peers at work? What are some of those things that we can do as sports field managers to, you know, elevate ourselves?
I think we have to just continue providing better surfaces, showing, you know, when I first took over, if I could save one resod for the season, it's 400,000, right? And I start saying, well, hold on a minute. If I'm saving you 400,000, where's it going, right? One, it probably needs to go to my, some of it needs to go to my staff because they're doing the majority of the work. We need to be compensated for what we're saving you. I think that we all can elevate ourselves and our profession just by how we act, what we provide on our fields, at our places, and also showing that we are committed to moving that organization in the right direction. Right? There's probably not a player on the team that knows my name. They've seen my face for many years, right? But most of them probably don't know my name, and I'm completely fine with that. But they also know that every field that they're going to step on, whether it's the stadium, our training facility, or our training camp fields, they're all going to be as good as we can possibly get them for them, and we're going to try to have them as consistent in January as we did in August, right? So I feel like we move forward. Sometimes we hold ourselves back of us moving forward, right? Like, make sure that the people in your organization or where you work know who you are, right? That doesn't mean you go throw yourself at them. It just means you want to make sure they know who you are, they know what you do, and they know that you care.
Hey, Travis, it's okay to resod, though. Don't worry too much about it.
You don't have to be so good at your job, okay? Just one time, one extra time, you know, it'll be fine. Obviously, when it comes to, you know, that, obviously part of that is bringing in that next group and setting standards that will elevate the industry, right? Dr. Goodley, I'm going to take a personal time, one of the greatest mentors I've ever had, you know, in my career. Oops, hit the mic, sorry. And just something that in our relationship that has just spoken wonders to, you know, you as a mentor is not just what you did for me when I was at Virginia Tech, but what you've done for me since then and continue to do to this day. A considerable part of a long-term successful professional, obviously, is that mentor. And being a mentor in a career where you follow along and you make sure you're there when they need you, right? Mm-hmm. Could you sort of talk about what's most crucial to that role as a mentor? And in your experience, what do you see critical to the success of those that you're mentoring? Sorry.
First of all, I just am that good.
You're damn
to take you there.
Sorry.
Now, anybody, if you think I'm being serious, I'm saying that.
He's not, but he is. I will brag.
Because being a successful mentor just means that you care. And as an instructor, an advisor, et cetera, I always cared about the students, and Drew is one that certainly shared that passion, that he cared about what he was doing. But I look around and see so many people in here that I consider as mentors. Young people, which we traditionally think of as mentees, but they also are already serving roles as mentors with their peers, with their brothers and sisters, et cetera. So the beauty of this entire association to me is that mentor, mentee, and vice versa relationship. And I find it quite simple about I generally enjoy people. If I feel like I can help and I'm asked to help, I'm going to do what I can. It's not easy for me. Most people are surprised to introduce myself to people in the roles that I play. For some of you in here, you're natural mentors. And I hope that you've noticed the placards that have been placed around the convention center to talk about a new initiative that Alpha Jones is going to introduce in just a little bit, that it's the first time I know of an association that's from a turf industry in which we're actually going to formally get a mentoring and mentee program off the ground. And I have great hopes and expectations for this. And the thing I tell people is, remember, a mentoring-mentee relationship goes in a lot of different directions. It might be industry-related, academic-related, as yours and mine was when we got started. but then it grows and becomes something, and eventually it's probably going to change to another mentor. But I see so much talent in this room, so please take a look at that. Pay attention to what Alpha says and figure out, can I be a mentor? Can I serve as a mentee for someone else? Because it's a two-way street of give and take.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to be giving a talk on this, but Leah, obviously internships are a big part of that when it comes to creating a mentorship. Taking on someone that's brand new to the industry, coming from a college program, whether it's a college program or just, you know, from the local area, what is it for you that you're focusing on in your internship program that, you know, you're able to have a long, sustained relationship with those? I know you have your former intern in this room today, so what is that like for you developing that?
It's probably the favorite part of my job, is getting to take young people who've never held a rake or never been on a mower and getting to see the glimmer in their eye when they get excited about it, or letting them finally take over and getting to see their excitement. It makes all of it worth it for me. I think internship programs, I mean, we've all felt it, that we're not getting the applications we normally do, or the quantity has just gone down, but that doesn't mean they're not out there and they don't want to learn. You creating an environment where they get to use every piece of equipment in your shop, they're just as responsible as your first assistant is for the success of a game day or a non-game day or event day. They have a hand in everything that we do at the stadium, and I believe building an internship program that then gets displayed on social media, or they talk to their friends at whatever college they're at and they say, oh, the Reno Aces internship was legit. I went and I got to do everything. And then the next year I have another student from that college, because word of mouth gets around that we've built a solid internship program. That's how you continue to build it. So kids talk. They tweet, they DM each other, they know what programs are out there that are good and which ones they spent a summer at hating, and it's up to us to build a program to educate this next generation and make them excited about this industry as we are, and giving them the chance to be a part of it. It's not just using them to pack clay and clean up the warning track. It's got to be more than that. You have to let them learn, let them fail, and change the way they thought of this industry, and moving forward, them continuing in this industry is all about how you present it to them.
I think empowerment's probably one of the most influential things that you can do as someone with your staff. Travis, I had the incredible opportunity to come out to Kansas City this summer, see how you interact with your crew and your guys. When it comes to the leadership of a crew, there are so many different aspects that come into play. There are so many things that we don't see, we don't understand. You know, they're human beings. You know, you have all of those things that come along with being a human, not just as a professional. You working with your staff, being able to see you empower them to make decisions. You were working on the renovation of your practice facilities, the sprigging rate. You were working with one of your guys trying to get him to understand what's best, what he thinks. You made sure that he was getting an opportunity to learn, right? What do you think is paramount when it comes to being a leader in the success not only of the field, but your entire staff as a whole?
I think the biggest thing for me is I want competitive people. I want everyone that's going to get on board with what we're trying to do, right? I have a line that I use. One, I'm uber competitive in anything, right? It doesn't matter what it is. If I've never done it, I still want to win, right? And if I lose, I'm probably going to practice it till I see you the next time and then try to beat you again, right? But I want my staff to know, I say to them, we don't want to keep up with the Joneses. We want to be the Joneses. We want everyone trying to keep up with us, right? Now, sometimes we're going to try things that are going to fail. Sometimes we're going to work harder than maybe other places that aren't going to try it. But we have a choice whether we attempt to lead or whether we just sit back and follow. And that's not how I'm wired. I'm not wired to just sit back and wait for someone else to show that it can be done. I'm trying to figure out how to either do it or do it better. And I want that out of them, but I also give them, you have to know when to give some rope and when to pull back, right? If I If I'm giving enough rope that they can hang me, then maybe I have an issue, right? But for the most part, I know the times that I can let them go, right? I have a couple guys in my crew that have been there for years, and this industry's changed in 30 or 40 years. Now, most people have educations, and it's moving in that direction, and they don't have that background. But it doesn't mean that they can't learn that, right? So even in a spray brew, I send them the chart that I use to make spray brews, and I tell them, I need you to make the spray brew for this week. I need you to bring it to me, and then we're going to talk about it. If it's good, then I'm going to tell them why it's good. If there's things I don't really like, then I'll go through and say, hey, here's what you kind of need to think about in this scenario. But I tell them all, I'm not here to babysit you. I'm here to give you the tools to do your job. I also have to do my job. And I'm going to back you every step of the way doing your job. I'm willing to take what may be your ass tear than should be mine, but it's obviously going to come back to me, right? But I'm willing to take that to make sure that you can move forward and empower you, that my goal for you 5 years down the road is that you are light years better than you ever thought you could be.
Absolutely. Abby, there's a scale that a lot of people don't understand with your job as a leader. What are some of the things that you focus on in that role to, again, have an impact and make sure that as the leader of the group, they're being successful in their work and working towards the standards that you've been able to set?
It's understanding what the standards are. It's understanding that they're already achieving it and encouraging them to set their bar higher. It's, like Travis said, it's empowering them to make the decisions, to bring ideas and be innovative. It's okay to try. I mean, we have 30 parks we can try stuff in. Pick one. Let's do it. And let's be behind them doing it. Let's encourage them to do it. We don't have to do all of them, but let's pick one. And standing behind that, no matter how it turns out, it all comes back to me if it's negative, and it all goes to them if it's positive. And let that steamroll through all of the staff and encourage every single one of them to feel like they have a voice to buy into our program.
Now, Leah, obviously, one of the youngest in minor league baseball when you started off, and still to this day. As a young industry professional, for those that are, in that role, that are coming up and learning firsthand what it takes to be a leader, what has that experience been like, and what are some of the things that you've learned that you think would be important for people to hear?
I am a millennial, and that we get beat up on a little bit, but I do take in a lot of information from all my predecessors. All former bosses I've had have been incredible, and I've learned something good or bad from them. Few of them are in this room, and I owe everything I am and where I've gotten to those people who've taught me what not to do or what to do. And I've been able to take that and then bring it down to my staff. And I'm really thankful for every person in this room, whether I've met you or not, whether you've liked my tweet or not. At some point, I've been influenced by every person in this room. This industry, this association is everything to me. I used to ask my parents for Christmas every year for money to come to the conference. I was not paid to go from my college. My program didn't send any students. So I came by myself every year since San Diego, Fort Worth. I was a college student by myself asking my mom for money at Christmas to come here because I knew how important it was, not only the education sessions, but all the networking. And I've spent so much time since I was 19 building my network and building my job opportunities to get to where I am. And I hope young people take advantage now that you're in this room with people you look up to or you've seen on Twitter or people that you've wanted to talk to. Go up to them. Say hi. They are more than willing to have a conversation with you, answer any of your questions. We are here to help each other and keep each other in this room for the next years to come. And I always encourage people to come to something like this. I mean, I really don't know any other industry that goes to each other's fields for vacations. You don't see accountants going to other accounting offices on vacation. You see us going and messaging Travis, hey, I'm in Kansas City, can I stop by? Absolutely. That doesn't happen in any other profession. And that's pretty amazing. And I think we need to champion each other in this room and continue to network and ask people and be a part of each other's lives. There's not a single person that would not answer a call if I had a question and vice versa. If you needed anything, I would do my best to help. Anybody up here would do their best to help. And I think that's the best part of this week and this association.
Absolutely. Dr. Goatley, obviously, when it comes to leadership, it's something that's difficult to teach, obviously, as an educator, as educators. But it's something that we really try to incorporate into just everyday works, right? What are some of the things that you've been able to do when it comes to the development of a leader in the sense of young students, whether they're graduated or just getting into turf industry?
I think you have to identify them. You have to encourage leadership. For some people, it's very natural, and there's always going to be someone that's probably willing to step up. And sometimes as a trainee of a leader, I heard Travis talking about taking the rope and pulling it back and being careful of what's being pulled. I see that happen. But again, I find most of it is an encouragement that everyone has what it takes to become a leader in some different format. And you do need to provide enough rope to give them a chance. We've talked about, hey, people learn by failing. You'd like to fail in ways that aren't spectacular, but you would like to provide people opportunities. So that's how I look at leadership, is probe, ask questions, see what potential is for people that maybe I'm advising, and then encourage them to, why not step up and get engaged, get involved, and take that next step and show what you can do as a leader.
Incredible. Chad, you know, there are so many things that are going into the future of this industry, and obviously we're talking about the leadership roles, the mentorship. What is sort of your hopes and your aspirations, you know, at seeing obviously so many people on any given day being all around the country working? What are your hopes for the industry as a whole? What's your hopes for the association moving forward?
Well, you know, our future is in our young people, and we've talked a good bit about that today, the opportunities you have. I would go with what Leah said. You know, everyone in this building and in this association, as long as I've been involved, which is almost 30 years maybe, has been approachable. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. It wasn't even an industry like field construction, so there was a lot to learn, and that everyone, it was amazing how approachable everyone was. It's amazing how current that is today. Even if we really don't know each other, we know we're part of this, and you can, I think you can call anyone up or find anyone in a directory and make contact and be well received. There's also the commercials people you're going to meet later today at the trade show. Same thing there. Yeah, they may be trying to sell you something, but you might be working with them or for them one day. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity there. There's so many facets you can connect with, or they go visit places that you may be working. So I think those are all tools that we can use. I know how specialized and what the skill set is for these jobs that you all do. It's amazing. I want to see the day that is recognized to the point that, hey, these people are truly professionals in what they do and what they offer to our kids, to our teams, to our universities, wherever it is, you know. It reaches everyone in some capacity, really, the work that we do.
I want to wrap up on a couple things. Obviously, I've grown to love this industry so much, and especially this event. I want to challenge you guys today as professionals. You know, if you see certain people that you may have saw on Twitter, go out and talk to them. Something that this group up here I call close personal friends. You know, Travis, we met through Twitter. I mean, there's just, it's so many different opportunities, and being here in the room, get out there and talk. To the students, I've met so many incredible college students since I've been here. Talk to the professionals. They want to talk to you, okay? They're here to help you move forward in this industry, and it all starts with a conversation, and you never know, you might end up working in Kansas City. You know, that was my first experience, was Matt Brown giving me the opportunity to go up to New York. I just open my mouth. And that's just an open conversation. It'll lead to something. Again, we want to thank you guys so much for coming out today. We're going to take a couple minutes for a couple questions if you have any. But we're really excited for you guys to be here. There's a microphone up here by this light stand. If you want to come up and ask a question, I saw your hand go up. And if anyone else, if you could line up, we have about 5 minutes, so we'll take a couple questions.
I'm getting a degree in recreation, but I'm going to get a minor in turf management. Is there any other things you can recommend?
Could you repeat that? Sorry.
I got late in the program, so I'm getting my degree in recreation, but I'm going to get a minor in turf management from Ohio State. Are there any other things you can recommend while I'm finishing school?
So any recommendations furthering education past minor in turf? What are you guys' thoughts?
I mean, for me, it's hands-on. I mean, the biggest education you can get is doing it, right? That's, you get in, like, obviously you want to be able to use the education, but what the book says and what the real world says are two different things a lot of times. So
yeah, I've had the great opportunity to work for the athletic department.
Yeah.
And that's been a tremendous benefit.
And I'd be diverse in where you try to look for those opportunities and diversify yourself in all the different experiences for the hands-on to then really figure out where you settle in.
Thank you.
Don't be afraid to get close to the mic.
Uh-oh, he's got a clipboard.
It's all right, I can't read. But my name's James. I'm here with Alec Moores, and I've been here. This is my first time here, and I'm learning a lot. I'm hearing a lot of things. And on this panel, and a recurring theme I've heard throughout today is there's a lot of workplace shortages. It seems to be a recurring theme. It's hard to find and retain people. I'm hearing a lot about mentorship and mentoring. It's really hard to get into college these days. It's really expensive, too. And a lot of Gen Z is not doing that. Does college or employment need to be a barrier? And could there be an opportunity to develop people into groundskeepers through amateurism?
I guess I could talk on that. So both of my full-time assistants do not have turf degrees. They both have business degrees. However, they both played baseball, love baseball, breathe baseball. They show up on time. They are hard workers. They do anything I ask and more. And those things I can't teach. Those things are you just being a good person, and that's what I look for when I hire. And then they are now getting a certificate from Ohio State. They're in the turf program there, but that came afterwards. I can teach you the turf stuff. I can teach you what fertilizers go out when. I can teach you why we do some of the things we do. I can't teach you to be a good leader and a manager to our part-time staff. I can't teach you to show up on time. I can't teach you to help our intern out when she needs it. Those things are what I look for in people, and the education comes second. I think we can all agree on some of that stuff. The hands-on stuff is just as important.
You can't teach caring. You can't teach someone to care.
No. Right? And the passion is not, you can't teach passion. And both of my assistants have a lot of passion, and they didn't know turf existed when they were in college. That wasn't an option for them. They've fallen into it, and they love it. And I'm happy to continue to light their fire and teach them what I can. And I think we would all agree to some extent in this room that, yeah, that's probably more important than the degree is.
And I can speak a little bit to it as well. We have high school students in our program. Obviously, other programs across the country, incredible people running those programs. But providing the opportunity to go out into the field while they're in high school has been able to give them the opportunity to see not only the industry but make connections and have people that are going to advocate for them for education once they're in the workplace. Because there has been a shift where, hey, I don't want you to leave. You know, you're amazing. I want you to be here. I don't want you to go off to college. Stay here. We're going to figure out how to get you a certificate. Virginia has a great certificate program that we're actually going to be providing to all of our students in their senior year capstone class. It's just finding people, and I think that's the most critical thing, is providing the network and be able to reach out to the incredible professionals in here, and they're going to help you guide that individual, that young professional, to where they need to be at any given moment, whether that's going to get a degree or work, figuring out if we can get a degree while you're working. It just all depends. I think another opportunity are the two-year programs at most of the colleges that, you know, yes, it's going to cost some money, but at the same time, like, it is a lot less compared to a four-year degree. I know. I have a couple degrees, not intelligent enough to I just waste my money. It's fine. But, you know, there is opportunity, and being able to connect people, that's how you're going to be able to overcome this troubles. So,
and I like what they said, certificate programs. If you've got the passion for this, these are the experts in terms of what that I don't do what these people do, and I couldn't do that. I would kill the grass, because that's kind of my role as an academic, at least that's what I tell people. But the certificate programs and your passion, and then for the other gentleman, think about the opportunities for continuing education, which are there for the taking, to get involved. And you pair that up with that drive, you're going to be a hot commodity in the market.
Also, reach out to your local chapters. A lot of local chapters do a lot of work with the universities, and really just being a member of your local chapter, field days, opportunities, all that is really big. So,
thank you. It sounds like we're in the people business.
Yes, we are.
All of the people with the right attitudes and the right leadership qualities. Thanks.
Of course. I think we have time for one more question. I see someone walking up now. So. Nope, he's going to sit down. All right. No worries. Well, we want to thank you guys so much.
Wait,
we're really excited.
Alpha's coming.
Oh, boy. Here we go. We're excited.
I warned you yesterday, never give me an open mic. I don't have a question, but I do have a statement. I kept hearing how certain things can be taught and certain things can't. So my challenge to the room, especially those of us who are in the roles of management, leadership, it's how you carry yourself is what's going to make the difference in terms of teaching. So if you carry yourself as a leader and you understand the role of leadership, those who are coming behind you, those who are working with you, are going to see that in you. Emulation is one of the very first things that we do as human beings in terms of learning things. If any of you have small children, the things that you do at home, turn around and watch your children. They emulate what you do. They actually duplicate what you do. And sometimes it kind of gets thrown back in our faces and we don't like it because it's a mirror of who we are. So keep that in mind in terms of when you're at the job. If you come in a ripped T-shirt and a pair of shorts, but you expect your staff to be professionals, look at yourself. Be professional in what you do. From the time you get out of your vehicle, be a professional. Be a leader, and then your staff will follow you.
Thank you for that. Well, that's it for the keynote, guys. Thank you for coming. We're really excited for everybody. We hope you have a fantastic rest of your SFMA 2024. All right?
Elevate your game with the Sports Field Management Association, the driving force behind the sports field industry's success. At SFMA, we're more than just an association. We're your partner in championing excellence in sports field management. Our dedicated members seamlessly blend cutting-edge turf grass science with the finesse of field maintenance artistry to craft surfaces that are not only playable, but also safe and beautiful. Established in 1981, SFMA has been at the forefront of fostering collaboration and innovation in the field. Today, our commitment to empowering professionals remains unwavering. By joining SFMA, you gain access to a network of like-minded peers eager to share their expertise and best practices. Plus, our educational opportunities ensure you stay ahead of the curve, equipping you with the knowledge and skills to excel in your role. With the SFMA, information and resources are always at your fingertips, empowering you to maximize efficiency and effectiveness. Say goodbye to wasted time searching for solutions. SFMA provides quick access to the tools you need to succeed. Ready to take your sports field management to the next level? Visit sportsfieldmanagement.org now to discover how SFMA can propel your career forward. Join our thriving community and unlock your full potential.